Emergency room visits are skyrocketing from the use of dangerous energy drinks. Are you next in line, suffering from fatigue, tiredness, or seeking peak performance? Real energy. iFatigue was obliterated with a groundbreaking new product called Ultra Rush. I feel the rush, and the best part is I've got real energy for peak performance. Ultra Rush cracked the code to energy. Recently published studies show that ingredients found together only in Ultra Rush increased energy an average of 45% in patients with chronic fatigue, and athletes experienced a 40% increase in stamina. Now that's energy. Visit UltraRush.com, UltraRush.com, ALTERRush.com. Free trial samples are available for a limited time. Get moving again with Ultra Rush, ALTERRush.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. Not intended to treat, diagnose, prevent, or cure disease. Results may vary.
Hey, y'all, are you looking for Corolla? Some chocolate superfood with organic vanilla. Food-based vitamins keep you a healthy fella. Use your wife's credit card, don't even have to tell her. Go to Natural News Store, that's what it's there for. Get your superfoods, herbs, and a lot more. Feel young like you did before, and let Mother Nature's medicine work it like it's there for. I know you care for your health, therefore. Don't eat those GMOs, throw them out the back door. Don't stay poor with the diet if it's killing you. Enjoy your life with nutrition that's filling you. We got freeze-dried fruit that's organic. Super clean, superfoods, best on the planet. Blueberry, strawberry, even pomegranate. Yeah, it's ready to ship, and if you buy it, you can have it. Yeah, this is Mike Adams, the Health Ranger. Check out store.naturalnews.com for all your organic supplements and superfoods. Or call 888-959-6415. That's 888-959-6415 to order now. Coconut, maca, spirulina, goji berry, superfood protein.
Do you know someone who can benefit from this radio program? You can find the complete archives of this show and hundreds of others at naturalnewsradio.com. Just send your friend that link, naturalnewsradio.com, where they will find truly amazing interviews and information that simply isn't published anywhere else. In the Natural News Radio archives, you'll find interviews with Dr. Andrew Wakefield, Senator Rand Paul, Governor Jesse Ventura, Suzanne Summers, alternative cancer doctors, nutrition experts, preparedness experts, and a wealth of others. And it's all free. Listen in real time at naturalnewsradio.com or download the MP3 archive files anytime you want to listen on your phone, mobile devices, or personal computer. When you want articles on these topics, check out naturalnews.com with over 35,000 article pages on nutrition, natural cures, health freedom, and much more. It's all part of the Natural News Network. Thanks for listening.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. For we must be the masters of our destiny. Let freedom ring.
Welcome. You're listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with co-hosts, doctor, attorney, and author, Mayor Eisenstein, and vaccine rights attorney, Alan Phillips, coming to you live Monday evenings here on blogtalkradio.com at 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 Central, 7 Mountain, and 6 Pacific times, proudly rebroadcast at naturalnewsradio.com Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Central, 11 a.m. Mountain, and 10 a.m. Pacific times. We welcome your calls during the live show. That number is area code 646-478-0772. That number again, 646-478-0772. You can call in to just listen to the show or to voice a question, offer comment, information, and so forth. And let's see, this is November 17th, if I'm looking at my calendar correctly. I'm vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, and with me my wonderful co-host, Dr. Mayor Eisenstein. Mayor, good evening. Pleasure to be here with you again, as always.
Oh, good evening, Alan. It's a pleasure to be with you. You know, you and I were talking a little bit before the show, and I kind of want to put in a little bit different perspective. We talked about this for a few weeks, and that is because there's still families are coming to me, patients of mine, who now the school is asking them for a religious waiver. And I think we can't emphasize it enough that you have to really study and preferentially hire an attorney like you, Alan, to help write the letter. Because still too many families get hung up on, we're not here to convince the people that vaccines are dangerous. And too many times they keep slipping things into the letter. Vaccine have toxins in them. You know, they've been shown to be dangerous. They aren't effective. I think it's a point we can't make enough to make sure that people don't do that.
Mayor, it's a really good point, and I'm glad you brought it up. We are, two-thirds of the way, give or take, through fall, the season on the calendar anyway, and maybe a good halfway through the fall, as I think of it in my practice, in terms of I have healthcare workers coming to me from sometimes as early as August and early September, right on up through early January, from around the country where the hospitals require all, increasingly now around the country, are requiring all their employees to get flu shots or lose their jobs. And Mayor, this is the give or take roughly midway point now here, and I'm already getting lots of really positive feedback. My clients are almost always successful, at least with avoiding the vaccines. But this is the time that I start hearing from people as well where they've tried it on their own and they've gotten rejected. Now, sometimes that's because the hospitals have unlawful policies, and this is something I see a really high percentage of the time with healthcare workers around the country. So this is a serious issue. But a lot of times it's because they have tried it on their own first, and there's a whole list of things to, in the hypothetical ideal statement, to avoid, but the single biggest one, Mayor, is exactly what you just said. People want to use their statement of religious beliefs to one degree or another to educate the reader. And as much as I would like to be able to say, yeah, this is the place to do it, take advantage of it, it's just, it backfires on you because adverse events do not support, bottom line, or your concern about adverse events will not support a religious exemption. In fact, it can undermine your efforts to get a religious exemption. This is an arena, Mayor, where the sort of common sense intuitive approach gets a lot of people in trouble because the way the law works is not consistent with that particular approach. But it really depends on a couple of things. Depending on what your situation is, and what laws apply. Sometimes people don't even have to state their beliefs at all to get a religious exemption. And sometimes even when they do have to state their beliefs, the authorities involved don't have authority to scrutinize the beliefs. But if you have to write the beliefs and they can look at it and weigh in and decide whether or not you qualify, then that's the situation where I think people are best served to do whatever they need to do to get information, to learn how the law works. And on a more practical level, if you have an experienced attorney that can help you with that, that's the safest way to do it and the way to come up with the best result. And I've, at this point, Mayor, have probably worked with something on the order of, 800 clients around the country over the last 10 years in all different kinds of exemptions. But how you write a statement of religious beliefs is pretty much the same anywhere, whether it's a school exemption, military, immigration waiver, employment, because all of it comes from what are the boundaries of the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution with respect to the part of the First Amendment that has to do with the free exercise of religion. So I have a lot of experience in that area. I'm learning all the time. God willing, I will keep learning. But got a pretty good handle on it at this point.
I let me say, you sure do, Alan. And I highly encourage people to go seek your counsel. You know, but I've got to make one point because we have a guest that you had talked to, and I see he's on the phone with us right now, and I want to get him on. But I just want to make one mention before I forget it. A couple of the hospitals in Chicago have become very sneaky. They have a form that they give you. If you say you want to have a religious waiver, and they give you about three lines where to explain why you want a religious waiver. And then the fourth line, I suppose you could put another page to it if you want, which I recommend. And the fourth line says, what is your religious affiliation? And and that, let me say, it's very interesting. I've had now two patients in the same hospital, And then they send them back a form letter saying, and both of them, one put down Roman Catholic, the other person put down Christian. And both times they got the same standard letter. All that was changed was the word Roman Catholic or the word Christian. And it said, being a Christian does not qualify you for a religious waiver. And all they did is have they had a word processor where they put the, and they had a big long page letter, that was it. And so I think you got to be very careful, because I would have possibly fallen into that trap, either purposeful or unpurposeful. Go ahead, Alan.
Oh, no, I just said bless you.
Oh, bless you. Oh, thank you, thank you. And I think you have to be careful not to fall into the trap. And your answer is, I have a sincerely, deeply held belief in God. And that's kind of would be my answer today if I saw that type of form, you know.
What's happening, Mayor, is this is evidence of a hospital that's using an unlawful criteria.
Exactly.
They have decided that you have to be a member of a church with tenets opposed to immunizations. And this is, sadly, Mayor, and at this point, I have worked with somewhere around 350 healthcare workers from all over the country. And I would say probably well over 95% of my clients' hospitals start out with an unlawful policy. And the most common mistake, or different variations on it, but the bottom line is, they want to either require a member of the clergy be involved to back you up, or that you be a member of a church with tenets opposed to vaccines. And those are requirements that overstep federal civil rights law boundaries. The federal religious discrimination laws prohibit an employer from requiring that you be a member of any organized religion at all. It doesn't matter whether you belong to one at all, and it doesn't matter which one you belong to if you do belong to one. What matters legally is what are your personal religious beliefs, or what is your personal interpretation of whatever your religion is. And once we communicate that to hospital administrators, and I do this by way of a two-page cover letter where I summarize all of this, but then a 10-page legal analysis, because there are many, many different parts and pieces to this and issues that come up under this larger umbrella of healthcare worker flu vaccines. But we've been, my clients and I, Mayor, I'm proud to say, have been changing policy all over the country. The bad news is that they're starting out with bad policies in the first place. But the good news is that we have my clients and I together have a real high success rate of correcting some of these policies and getting them fixed. So if somebody gets rejected because the hospital didn't like the fact that they were a Christian or a Roman Catholic or a Buddhist or anything like that, but, you know, they're looking for you to say, I don't know, Amish or Christian Scientist, who knows what they're really looking for. But if that's why they reject you, that's an improper rejection, and you've got choices there. You can just file a complaint with the EEOC at that point. That's, your next formal step if you wanted to do it that way. But if you want, you could also have an attorney write a letter explaining the law to them, and you can never guarantee how administrators are going to respond, but many times they will do the right thing. Not always, but many times they will do the right thing and change their policy and fix it, because most hospitals don't want to get involved with an EEOC complaint if they don't have to, or a potential lawsuit further down the road if it really came to that. But ultimately, it's a case-by-case basis, because everybody's different, so you never really know what's going to happen until you put it out there
exactly.
And see what they do. Well, what say we go ahead and pull our guest on here? But Mayor, I know we had a short conversation about antibodies right before the show. I'd love to come back to that. And if we have time before the end, maybe I'll talk a little bit about what I see going on with the mask policies, because that's a huge secondary issue in the healthcare worker flu vaccine arena. But I had occasion to have some exchanges recently with a gentleman named Tom. Tom, welcome to the show this evening.
Why, thank you very much, Mr. Phillips. I appreciate you having me on, and we appreciate hearing from Dr. Eisenstein. Very, very nice to have him on as well.
I'm excited to hear what you're doing, because Alan told me that it sounded very, very exciting.
Well, it is very interesting, and I, although the running part is a little bit crazy, I think it's a little bit weird that a 56-year-old person has to run from his home to Washington, D.C. to try to get the media to cover what they ought to be covering, which is the issues surrounding vaccine safety and what's happening to our children nationwide. That doesn't make me automatically opposed to vaccines, but it does make me interested in the public, I mean the media covering the fact that some really crazy things are going on with the Centers for Disease Control. And we should remind the listeners that the CDC stands for the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And when we think prevention, we think not getting sick. And with over 50% of our children now suffering from some kind of a chronic ailment, whether it's something mild like allergies or something more severe like neurological problems, we really need to look at what they're doing and what they're not telling the public. Many of your listeners probably know about the scandal that was brought to the public in August when one of their scientists came forth and said, well, we weren't entirely truthful about the link between autism and the MMR shots. It's just frustrating that nothing's been in the media. And so I decided, I happen to be a distance runner, and in the medical center where I just was working for maybe the last almost 8 years, the Schachter Center for Complementary Medicine in Suffern, New York, we treat a lot of children with neurological problems and troubles, a lot of allergies, asthma, ADHD, developmental problems. And you know what, I hate to say this, but every single one has a history of vaccinations. Is it a cause? I don't know, but I haven't seen too many populations of unvaccinated children who are sick.
Tell us your background. Boy, I love what you're saying.
Well, I'm a nutritionist, and I've never been so organized to go back and get my MS or PhD, but I'm a writer. I just sent the second edition of Anti-Vitamin Baloney to the publisher today. I'm a Cornell University graduate. And my degree was nutrition and biochemistry. I love trying to get people to be healthier. And I have a daughter who's now 33. We homeschooled her for a few years so that we would not have to vaccinate her. And this was back in 1987, 1988 in New York State. So we were concerned about the safety of vaccines back then. And
well,
I
love your background. I mean, I think you're spot on the problem. You would think that someone would catch on that the health of our children is in such peril. And you said it very well. It may or may not be related to vaccines, but it's surely something you have to put in the equation, and you surely have to explain why you don't see the same data in unvaccinated children.
Well, I'm really disturbed because the Department of Health and Human Services will not take 10,000 unvaccinated children and 10,000 vaccinated children. And if you've got 2% of our children who are never vaccinated, well, that's a lot of children. It's not hard to find a few thousand unvaccinated children. Let's compare the health of the fully vaccinated versus the unvaccinated and control for income and socioeconomic class and so forth, and let's see what the difference is. I would love to see that study done. If they're so sure that these things are safe, fine. Let's step up to the plate and do the studies.
Well, you know, it's one of the rules of thumb in war. When you're winning the war, you don't go ahead and try to show that what you're doing is wrong. And this is, you know, I think, what incentive does anyone in the pharmaceutical industry have to do a study like you proposed, you know, when they've already convinced the majority of doctors that this is the greatest thing in the world, and it would be malpractice to even think of doing a study like that.
Well, I agree. And by the way, Dr. Eisenstein, we have your book in our office, and so whenever we're talking about the need to inform our patients about vaccines, make an informed vaccine decision for the health of your child is sitting there, and we talk about you a lot. So you're kind of famous in the office where worked until September.
Oh, that's so sweet. Tell us about the run. I'd like to hear about what you're doing.
Sure. The run is really 30 to 40 miles per day. I'm leaving January 7th, about 7 or 8 in the morning. I plan to stop around every 30 to 40 miles, And along the way, I hope to have press conferences like with the Daily Freeman in Kingston and maybe the Times Union in Albany and the Bergen Record in North New Jersey and all the way down through Trenton, Philadelphia, Baltimore, and I don't know that I'll be meeting with any newspapers in Washington, but I'm ending on 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, which, of course, is the White House. And I'm a little bit angry that the media just isn't cover. I mean, I don't expect them to cover this now because it's 6-7 weeks away from now, but I'm trying to get them to do their job and to cover the issue. Logistically, that's just what long-distance runners have to deal with, what you're going to eat, where you're going to sleep, and all that. That's being taken care of now. But I hope that the message of my run gets out. The run is just a vehicle with which we try to get the message out there. I mean, I've talked to NVIC, and they are just not covering the other side of the story. People say, oh, you have to be balanced. You have to be balanced. Okay, I'm all for balance. But if the only thing you hear in the media is pro-vaccine information, why don't they show the other side? So I'm running to show my side, which is we need to let doctors like Dr. Thompson and Brian Hooker and other folks from the CDC, we need to hear what they have to say. Okay, we've heard what Edward Snowden had to say about that issue, about the NSA. Well, let's hear what Bill Thompson has to say with his experiences, and let's hear about the cover-ups of the Danish study of 1993 that was fraudulent, and now we have a doctor who is co-author who's on the run.
And you are literally beyond the run to show that there's a problem. I love it. You know, let me tell you, Tom, I love what you're doing, you know, and I love your background. I'm honored that you have our book in your office. One thing I'd like you to do is you can email me a picture of yourself. I will send it out, and the information I will – and even if you could do a short video for me, you know, 30, 40 seconds, I will send it out to my whole email list. And let people know.
Oh,
and I've got lots, you know. I know I love what you're saying, you know. And you can also, as we get closer, to be able to send me, if not daily updates, but at least every day or two. How far is the run from beginning to end?
It's 420 miles.
Wow.
It's on my website. The website is 400milerunforchildren.com. That is my website. I am not raising money for this. I'm just getting enough money to cover expenses. So if I raise a few hundred dollars to pay for hotel rooms and new pair of running shoes and things like that, I'm coordinating some of my run with the Vaccine Liberation Army, and we're going to be trying to get decals on people's cars. But, yeah, I am trying to raise modest funds with that website.
Give me the email address again.
The website. It's 400, well, it's my name, tompetrie.net. But if you want the direct site to the page, it's 400milerunforchildren.com.
And the 400 would be 400?
Yes, 400. And I'm impressed with myself. I talked to PayPal, and I was able to get a donate button put on my website. So that's pretty cool.
That's really cool.
I'm pretty advanced with the computers. I finally figured out a way to do that. So when you get an email, you have $25. It's kind of cool. So, but
well, this sounds
I got one like that
awesome.
This morning. It was so much fun. I'm like, wow, this really works.
Oh,
this
is absolutely fabulous, Tom. I just found your website here. You know, this is, and you actually have a. Wonderful email that I'm looking at, you know, a video, and I will send this out. I will send it out.
Oh, I did a brief 5-minute video just explaining why I'm doing the run, and my wife did the camera work, and then I did a brief 2-minute video saying, oh, can you please send a little money? So
I love it.
I have no idea what I'm doing, but I did try with I'm not savvy with computers, but anybody who donates is going to get a free copy of my book, Anti-Vitamin Baloney, which is now the mainstream media's anti-vitamin agenda as of today. And I will email them a free copy of the book. I don't care if you donate $5 or $50, you're getting a free version of the book. You can get that immediately.
Oh, it's, Tom, let's keep us informed. I've got the information. I'm going to put it together. And the video looks very nice. I'm just looking at it right here, you know. And I can tell you there's two things in video or anything like this. You can either be super professional or you can be drop-dead honest like you are. Both of them come off exactly the same. You know? So,
you're very kind. Thank you very much.
No, wonderful. Thank you for joining us. And keep calling us and let us
know. Thank you very much for having me on. I'm so honored, both of you, and I hope you both have a great evening, and thanks so much for this opportunity.
Thank you, Tom.
Sure.
All right, take care.
Take care.
Alan, oh, I like it. That's so. You know, this reminds me of what Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, our dear friend, says, that you do something. Just, you know, be active. Get out there. This is great. I mean, this is absolutely great, and it'll have an impact.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Well, and we've got, you know, a heads up on it here with for a few weeks. So he's got, I'm sure he's in training now for that. But we've got an opportunity to start spreading the word all around the alternative vaccine community and alternative health community. So if we can create sort of a groundswell of support here that could potentially help to drive and feed getting this into maybe some mainstream media outlets, if nothing else, along the way on his trip. But hopefully we'll get some national attention on it. You never know. We'll see what happens.
You never know. I love it. I absolutely love it. You know, wow. That's, you know, I know. It's just, you know, it's so typical what you and I have talked about, that the professional and the publics who have studied vaccines are so well informed, and so it's, you know, they've read the studies, they've done so much, and the people who have who spout that vaccines are safe, for the most part, have never even looked at anything. I don't care what it is. Very exciting.
Well, be sure and stay tuned for our next exciting episode, as they say. Well, Mayor, let me, if I may, draw your attention back to our discussion right before the show, because I had someone send me some email information, and I think it was information from many decades ago, at least some of it, and they were talking, the email was talking about the process of assessing antibodies and so forth, and it sounded scary and archaic, but it made me realize that I really know nothing about the actual process of testing for antibodies, and I wondered if you happened to know anything about that. It could maybe enlighten me and all of us a little bit about the process, the qualifier at the end of our discussion notwithstanding, about what does that really mean. But do you know anything about the actual process? How do they, you know, count the antibodies or get an antibody count or determine, you know, if a vaccine, for example, has had the desired antibody response, or maybe how do you just determine whether or not somebody has been previously exposed to a disease and maybe has a natural antibodies? Do you know much about how that works?
Good question. Well, I know a little bit, and I can tell you that our listeners should go back to the archives and listen to Dr. Obakanich, because she really explained it in detail. You have to listen to it a couple of times to really understand it. But let me see if I let me take a stab at it. When the body is exposed to different bacteria, viruses, it doesn't have to be bacteria and viruses. Even different blood types. If by mistake you're given a wrong blood type, the body starts to have a reaction and produces antibodies. And the antibodies, antigens. And antigens are what the body will produce in order to start again. I mean, it's too late at night. You know, it produces antibodies. You know, and antibodies are molecules that will fight off the infection. So let's say you're exposed to measles, mumps, doesn't make a difference. The body starts producing antibodies against that, and so that if you can overcome the illness, it has a memory and it won't let that bacteria or virus invade your body. And so it's a theory. We don't know if it's real or not real. And so what they've done is, with vaccines, They give you a vaccine, and then they can measure the antibody level that the vaccine produces. And the way they measure it is by taking the antibodies in your blood and diluting it. So you'll see a 1 to 2, a 1 to 4, a 1 to 16, a 1 to 32. And the higher the dilution level is, the more powerful the protection allegedly you have. And if you have no antibodies in your body, theoretically you have no protection against this illness. The problem is that antibodies don't necessarily mean immunity. And so vaccines may produce antibodies. It's a response to injecting into your body, but the antibodies may not mean you have immunity. That's why it's so important for all of us not to talk about this as immunization, but vaccination, which may confer immunity. I hope I've helped a little bit and not confused the issue even more.
Well, it reminds me, when in the early days of my own investigation into the issue as a parent, this was before I was even thinking about going to law school, I remember encountering information about a 1950 study looking at diphtheria, and the bottom line is they found people who were resistant, who had very low antibody levels, and then people who contracted diphtheria that had very high antibody levels. And so it seemed to run directly counter to the notion that antibody level necessarily means you're protected. And in my lay understanding, and feel free to clarify or validate or correct as may be necessary or appropriate, but my lay understanding is that there are many different aspects to immunity and that antibodies are certainly a component of that, but only one component. And perhaps one can be protected not necessarily regardless of antibody levels, but maybe at minimum not necessarily in direct correlation to antibody levels, and which in any case seems to be what you're saying and what Dr. Obakanich just said. And part of what Dr. Obakanich said, if I remember correctly as well, Mayor, is that even if you do have a high antibody count when you get a vaccine, and even if that does mean protection, the antibody level can drop over time. And some people, I know this just sort of anecdotally because some of my clients in certain situations have gotten or get antibody tests, and some of them show high titer levels from vaccines they got as kids, even though now they're adults, and others don't. And so it just seems to be a very individualized thing. Some people can get vaccines as children and have, again, whether or not it means immunity is a separate question, but they can have high antibody levels for an extended period of time. But if I understood Dr. Obakanich correctly, a lot of people could start with a high antibody response, but that could drop over a period of weeks or months. And
exactly.
So
I think you're right on point, Alan. You know that it's not a it's kind of an indirect measurement of if you see, as opposed to, I'll give you an example. If someone has a different blood type than their mother, unborn baby, and now you can have sometimes leaking of blood from the mother circulation to the baby circulation, and the baby can start developing antibodies to the mother's blood, and that you start measuring also, like if it's anti-A, anti-B, and it's 1 to 2, 1 to 4, 1 to 8, and that clearly has been shown to be problematic. But and so the vaccine that they give, Rogam, theoretically was to destroy the antibodies. They're not even sure that really works. It's the same thing. It's something, but it's a different theory. It's not a vaccine. It's not a pathogen they're giving. They're giving blood. You're essentially getting a blood product from someone who has antibodies in there to destroy the antibodies that you've made. And we're getting too confusing here. Yeah, the bottom line is the bottom line is that antibodies are not a direct correlation between having an illness and not having an illness. Always.
Yeah. Yeah, when you get the third cousin once removed, I start losing track of the relationship.
I love it. You know, Alan, I think we better go to a break because I think we're a little bit over that and we'll come right back.
Yep, we are. Thanks, Mayor.
Thank you.
Emergency room visits are skyrocketing from the use of dangerous energy drinks. Are you next in line, suffering from fatigue, tiredness, or seeking peak performance? Real energy?
Real.
iFatigue was obliterated with a groundbreaking new product called UltraRush. I feel the rush, and the best part is I've got real energy for peak performance. UltraRush cracked the code to energy. Recently published studies show that ingredients found together only in UltraRush increased energy an average of 45% in patients with chronic fatigue, and athletes experienced a 40% increase in stamina. Now that's energy. Visit UltraRush.com, UltraRush.com, AlterRush.com. Free trial samples are available for a limited time. Get moving again with UltraRush, AlterRush.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. Not intended to treat, diagnose, prevent, or cure disease. Results may vary.
The Natural News Store is now open. Hi, this is Joni Cox with Homegrown Health with some great news for your health and your budget. Visit shopnaturalnews.com to start saving money right now on superfoods like cacao, camu camu, and acai. You'll find coconut flour, coconut sugar, and hemp seeds, as well as detox products like Zeotrex, Oxy Powder, and Nascent Iodine. You'll also find survival organic food supplies and colloidal silver. Both can help you prepare for natural disasters or other events that might threaten your health or safety. As Hurricane Sandy recently talked America, just one storm can knock out the power grid and leave us all scrambling for food and medicine. We've also got amazing herbal medicine cabinets and herbal survival kits. Plus, we're the exclusive source for the all-new Natural Attitude Turmeric Extract. It's a powerful, alcohol-free, liquid form of turmeric with high absorbability. Plus, get free shipping in the USA on orders of $99 or more. A portion of all sales helps fund health freedom and food freedom initiatives. Find all this and much more at shopnaturalnews.com. That's shopnaturalnews.com.
Have you ever wanted to learn where you can get free food and medicine from the plants growing around your neighborhood? Or how to turn your own backyard into a food production center? Or even how to reverse cancers using the latest groundbreaking research in alternative cancer therapies? You can learn all this and more from webseed.com. It's sort of like Netflix, but it's for documentaries and how-to courses on natural health, food production, self-reliance, and other life-saving topics. I'm Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, and I created WebSeed so that listeners like you could get instant streaming access to truly groundbreaking instructional courses. Our new program called Vaccines Armed and Dangerous exposes the total fraud of modern vaccine quackery, and our Surthrival course teaches emergency preparedness, including skills like how to build your own emergency water filter. Explore over 100 valuable courses and documentaries right now at WEBSEED.com.
We are back with the Know Your Rights Hour. Dr. Mayor Eisenstein, Attorney Alan Phillips. Mayor, I wanted to share and perhaps get your input on what I'm starting to see in the healthcare worker arena around the country having to do with masks, face masks.
Okay, good. I like that.
What hospitals all over the country are doing is, of course, everything they can to maximize their influenza rates for their employees. And so they start often, as I mentioned earlier, with really aggressive and overly restrictive policies. But they often will have a second line of defense, so to speak, from their perspective. All right, well, if you're not going to get the vaccine, then you have to wear a mask during flu season. Now, I've seen a variety of policies, and I've actually had two clients, only two, but two clients whose hospitals considered the mask issue and decided not to have a mask policy based on immunization status, and I personally think that's the only scientifically and legally valid policy. But far more common, they have a very aggressive policy, and at the other extreme end, they will say something like, you have to wear a face mask throughout your entire shift, and then they'll say, you know, for some period of time, 8 months out of the year. I've had at least three different nurses tell me that was literally the policy. You wear a face mask throughout your entire 12-hour shift, and nurses often have 12-hour shifts. You wear that face mask except while you're eating. I even had one nurse, Mayor, who went in on her day off on a Saturday to get her paycheck. All she was walk in, get her paycheck, and walk out, and she was reprimanded for not having put on her mask as soon as she got out of the car to the point that she got back to her car. So, you know, on the surface, without even analyzing it medically or legally, it's obviously a coercion and punishment. It's like you don't really want to have an exemption because you're going to have to wear this mask. Oh, you're going to go for the exemption anyway? Well, then, you know, we're going to punish you for it. It's a really interesting issue, though, Mayor, because while to me, on one level, it's really pretty straightforward and simple, it wouldn't be a surprise to any of our listeners, Mayor, that I'm not a fan of the CDC's view on vaccines, but I think they nailed the mask policy. During the swine flu pandemic, or in the aftermath of that, they came out formally and publicly, and this was a policy they published in the Federal Register. It's a federal legal publication where agencies will publish proposed new rules or new rules after they've been finalized. And they had a recommendation for face masks. Now, this is in the context of a pandemic. And they are saying that healthcare professionals should wear a face mask when the worker, the healthcare professional, or the patient has symptoms and you're within close proximity to one another. In other words, it's a symptom-based policy. And they acknowledge, now this would be obvious to anybody who has a, you know, insight into how small viruses actually are, face masks don't block or filter viruses out of the air. So there really is no benefit from wearing a mask unless you have symptoms, because a face mask will block the droplet particles from a cough or sneeze, but not filter viruses out of the air. So it really doesn't make sense, just in sort of common sense terms or medically or scientifically as I understand it, for anyone to be required to wear a mask based on immunization status or vaccination status. Now, you add further to this that, as we know, the CDC, of course, admits this on their website, and it's clear from the medical literature that vaccines don't work in everybody. And let's pretend for a minute that having that antibody count does mean that you're protected, even though we've pretty much already raised that question earlier this evening. But even if it did, and let's assume that people who don't get vaccinated aren't protected, even though that's silly, because you can get natural immunity. You know, that rare condition no one's ever heard of anymore, natural immunity. Even if you don't get a vaccine, or probably even if you do get a vaccine, but anyway, even if we assume that you're not protected if you're not vaccinated, we know that some percentage of the vaccinated people are not protected either, because vaccines don't work in everybody. And yet none of those people ever have to wear masks. So on just kind of a common sense level, it doesn't seem to make sense scientifically. It seems to be discriminatory. And I'll just add the brief legal piece to it in terms of the work that I do, because I help people with religious exemptions. And if you haven't heard any of our discussions on this before, it's a lengthy explanation, but in quick summary, it really doesn't matter whether you belong to an organized religion at all or which one you belong to if you do. So it's really a wide open door in terms of who can potentially qualify for religious exemption. Because a lot of people hear the word religion, Mayor, and they say, oh, well, I don't even go to church, or I'm not a Christian scientist, right. I can't have a religious exemption. And folks, don't close that door so quickly, because it's a much broader door. But if you have religious objections to the vaccine, then those beliefs are protected by federal civil rights law. And your employer has to provide, and the language in the law is, a reasonable accommodation. So if the reason you're wearing a mask is because you have religious, qualifying religious objections to the vaccine, that mask policy has to be reasonable. Well, if it's not supported by science, it's not a reasonable policy. If they're not treating other people in the same situation, such as the vaccinated people whose vaccines don't work, and they're not protected either, then it's discriminatory. So there's two or three different angles in terms of legal arguments. But this is something that's very aggressive, Mayor, and I can, you know, talk all day about here's what I think the proper analysis is and so forth. But there's no place in the law that spells out exactly what the answer is on this issue. So technically speaking, it's a legally unresolved, or officially or technically speaking, a legally unresolved point. So I don't wish a lawsuit on anyone, but what we really need here, Mayor, is for some people to take the issue to court, and to, so we can generate some legal precedent that would then, assuming the precedent was in our favor, would then open a door for people around the country.
Oh, I totally agree. I totally agree. I mean, it seems that the unvaccinated nurse is more at risk for doing something than the person who's exposed to Ebola in Africa and comes back to the United States because they don't have to wear a mask. Remember the nurse who complained about it, who was put in confinement for 21 days. The court actually said that no, she can go walk around. She just has to be careful what she does, you know. And we're talking about someone who directly was in contact with Ebola patients, you know, with the person in school or the nurse who has no symptoms. I've never heard of doing something for people with no symptoms. It makes absolutely no sense.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't to me, and I'm glad to have your corroboration on that. You know, I just noticed we have another caller in the queue there, and we're getting close to the end of the show here, Mayor. What say we bring in this other caller?
Sounds good to me.
Somebody calling in with the phone number ending in 79. You're on the air.
Hi. This is Devorah. I've called in before.
Yes. Hi, Devorah.
I can't believe I'm not seeing it right now, but my son's school sent home something. Just, you know, they asked me, you haven't sent a form. I said, I meant to get to it. I didn't get to it yet. And basically, they just want me to sign saying that I'm aware of the law and that I, because of religious, you know, beliefs, I'm not going to be vaccinating. Is there any... I don't know where it disappeared to, because I would be reading it to you right now.
You said that you're aware of the law.
This is basically what it states. Oh, okay, I see it now. I'll read exactly the wording.
Good.
Yeah. Okay, it says, to whom it may concern, we, the undersigned, wish to confirm and attest that we have personal religious reasons against immunizations. Due to our personal religious beliefs, and in accordance with Public Health Law, Section 2164, Sub 9, we refuse to give immunizations to our son, date of birth, and sign. Any problems with that? Does it sound like there's anything questionable?
Read it once more to me. I'm slowing the uptake. Read it once more, please.
Okay, it says, to whom it may concern, we, the undersigned, wish to confirm and attest that we have personal reasons against immunizations due to our personal religious beliefs and in accordance with Public Health Law, Section 2164, Sub 9, we refuse to give immunizations to our son, date of birth.
Let me, I'm not familiar off the top of my head, maybe Alan is. What is that law say you have a right in New York to a religious, personal religious waiver? You know, it's like... I think you have to look up the law and see what it says, because otherwise you don't know what you're signing to.
So yeah, because it doesn't sound like a problem. Sounded like a problem, because it's not saying, oh, well, I have to do this or that or anything.
Yeah, I thought sure what you were going to read was something that said you understand that if there's a local outbreak, your unvaccinated child
right,
has to
exactly.
stay home,
yeah,
which
that's
is what policy
I expected
all over
to get.
The country.
I really expected to get that.
I'm in front of my computer. Can you give me the section there again?
It's section 2164, and then I guess the subsection is 9.
And that may be administrative code, Mayor. In general,
in New York. Yeah.
Yeah, and just so we're clear, this is not none of this that we say is intended to be legal advice.
I understand. Yeah. Now I just wanted to know if there's anything that sounds
In New York, you have to, according to the statute, you have to state what your beliefs are, and then the individual schools, if I understand correctly, have authority to scrutinize the beliefs. However, it just in general. the people who are accepting or processing vaccine exemptions do not necessarily have to enforce the law fully. They can choose to be more lenient if they want to. And mm-hmm. what I hear you saying is something that's not even asking you to explain what your beliefs are. And if that's the case, then it sounds like what they're saying is, we're just not even going to mess with that. We just want something on record from you that says, you know, this is your position. And I would count my blessings and run, because I hear horror stories in New York from schools
that do scrutinize. I have a friend
that
had just changed schools. She's changing schools because of such a headache.
Yeah, and some of the districts are much more aggressive than others, is my understanding. And some of them, basically, they will just pretty much reject any exemption request and, you know, make the parents jump through hoops to mm-hmm. exercise their rights. And I don't think all of those rejections are proper.
Can you give me the code number again? I didn't get it straight
it's
the first time.
2164.
2164.
And I guess sub something 9. Like the, I don't know, that's...
Okay. All right. I'm sorry, Alan. I didn't mean to interrupt, you know.
No, that's fine. And yeah, and I guess I don't know for sure off the top of my head if that's a statute or administrative code, but
that's public health law. Yeah.
It could.
Oh, it could be either or. Okay.
It could still be either one, although that is more suggestive to me of a regulation than a statute. But the point is that, I mean, this is really interesting because they have authority to scrutinize. They have authority to say, you know, to require you to, because the statute already does this, to spell out what your beliefs are. And it sounds like this particular form is saying, we don't want to get into that. We just want a record, you know, a written record that this is your position or belief or whatever. I didn't hear anything there that jumped out at me, you know, as a potential problem.
Mm-hmm.
But if you wanted to know for sure, of course, you would check with the New York attorney. And if people in New York want an attorney, they can email me and I'll refer you to someone. It's the only place in the country, interestingly enough, that I know someone that I can refer people to is in New York. And I know a couple of activists that have worked for many years helping people with exemptions. And then there's an attorney that I know of. He's really low-key about it, doesn't put it on his website. Mm-hmm. But he does help people on a regular basis, and I've heard positive feedback about him. So there are people in New York I can refer folks to if they want to, you know, pursue it further mm-hmm. and more formally.
Yeah, I think the reason to look into it is to make sure. It looks like, I haven't been able to track it down yet here, that that this has to do with the right for a religious waiver for a personal belief in New York. You know, it would be good to be able to read through exactly what the public health law says mm-hmm. so that you kind of – and I agree with Alan. I think getting an attorney involved here is worthwhile, if nothing else, to read the statute and help you, because you may want to add something to the letter, even putting in the statute, you know. And although I agree with you, Alan, this seems fairly benign. But, you know, it was kind of like the question they had on the hospital form – for a personal waiver, what is your religion? And then they use that as a reason not to give you a waiver.
What was the, it was 2164, and what was then the subsection?
9.
9, okay, because I've got it in front of me here. This section shall not apply to children whose parent, parents, or guardian hold, this is the first time I've ever seen a law refer to parent and parents in the singular and plural in the same section. That's interesting. This section should not apply to children whose parent, parents, or guardian hold genuine and sincere religious beliefs which are contrary to the practices herein required, and no certificate shall be required as a prerequisite to such children being admitted or received into school or attending school. Now, that particular section does not sound to me like it's saying you've got to spell out your beliefs.
Right.
So that's really
wow.
interesting.
What does certificate mean? What do you think that means? Obviously, they define it.
And no certificate. Certificate of immunization.
No certificate
shall be required as a prerequisite to admission. So you don't have to have the certificate of immunization showing that you've gotten the vaccine, which is required in another subsection here. So.
Actually, that's a pretty good letter.
It's
better than I've seen anywhere else. You know, DeVore's done a good job here, you know.
I just had a good pick, I guess. I don't know what to say.
Congratulations.
Because they also asked, like, if a child had chickenpox, to please send a record with a date. So I guess somebody else did. The child had chickenpox, but they chose to give other things, can skip that. And they make it very easy.
Yeah.
So this sounds pretty safe, and I could just sign it and be okay and not have to be concerned.
Well, as Alan said, can't give legal advice over the phone.
I know, but what I'm saying is, on a general,
like,
there's no flags. There's no red flags from at this point.
Yeah, well, you know.
That's what I wanted to ask.
Yeah, I think so. That sounds pretty good, you know. That sounds good. Laura, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, Alan, it's kind of interesting because that was as good as I've heard from anything in a long time. You know, I know there's no question about it that more and more we're having little spots of parents who are in administrative positions who are it's not the battle that I see in a sense of 10 years ago, where the school nurses, many of them already say, oh yeah, you're those parents, but it's not you're the only one anymore.
Yes. Well, the numbers are growing, Mayor. I mean, the pharmaceutical agenda certainly keeps rolling forward so far, but so is awareness and opposition. You know, tonight is the first time we had a runner on the show. I mean, you know, there's just the people are finding new and creative ways and more ways, and more people are doing this to try and call attention to this. I was talking with an activist just a little while ago before the show and was reminding me that there were 120-something parents who have put together their two-minute, you know, videos posting on the Internet saying, here's what happened to our child after vaccines. And this is going to get some attention, hopefully more and more attention. And when the inertia here is large enough, it's got to break through the dam somewhere at some time, Mayor. They can't keep stuffing all this under the rug forever. So I hope everyone listening will continue to keep educating yourselves more and more, sharing information when it's appropriate, when you can do that, and looking for opportunities to help contribute to raising awareness, because there is a progressive, positive awareness movement happening. And, Mayor, it's the crazier it gets, the more compelled we all are to do something and do whatever we can. And I just mentioned one quick example, because I just saw this recently as a link to it on the pandemicresponseproject.com website news page, pandemicrespond.com, pandemicresponseproject.com. I'll just read the title. It's about all the time we've got here. 5 seniors die after flu shot at assisted care center in Georgia. This is on healthimpactnews.com. Apparently, there was a round of flu shots given at this assisted care living, and within a week, 5 seniors had died. And the norm at this particular center is they lose a senior or two every 6 months. And so this was a substantial increase in the usual
just
death rate.
Just a coincidence, Alan. Just a coincidence.
Okay, thanks, Mayor. I feel much better now.
I know. I mean, how I hope it raises some type of awareness, you know. Awesome. Well, I think we're on to the last few seconds here, Alan.
We are, Mayor. And, you know, every time I hear another piece of horrifying news, it just re-inspires me and re-motivates me to do everything I can to help people legally avoid vaccines and to pass laws giving us the right to make informed choices. Mayor, pleasure as always.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to the Know Your Rights Hour with Dr. Attorney and author Mayor Eisenstein, Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips. We're here with you every Monday night live on blogtalkradio.com/KnowYourRightsHour at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific Time. Proudly rebroadcast at naturalnewsradio.com Wednesday afternoons at 1 p.m. Eastern Time and 10 a.m. Pacific Time. We'll see you next week, folks.
Let freedom ring throughout the land. Let no one trade your soul for dollars, dirty hands. Demand the truth, transparency. masters of our destiny.